everybody.
Good afternoon.
Just call this, get this ball rolling and get things started. And I was going to say, where is my agenda? But I got that one next. Everybody's got copies. I don't know if you guys got them on the phone, version 1 and version 2, and the wireless communications proposed ordinance.
Jim, Sigmund, everyone has one.
I do have the latest copies, I believe.
Yes, okay. Yes, you do.
Just, I need to know if you have them so I knew how to treat you. Version 1, version 2, and then the proposed ordinance.
Right.
What I have.
And then you have this one that is proposed for this reading?
So, first discussion of listed priorities, Shabana is going to cover those, and we'll let her get started.
Actually, what I was told to do at the last meeting, since numbers, we were trying to finish the rest of the issues today, since 9, 10, and 14 were very technical, I was told to submit those as just possibilities directly to Dave Wessner.
Okay.
So I did that, and I was told to bring 13 here today as the final issue, and that, the handout that you have in the top that says in green, edits proposed to committee at 4/20/11 meeting, four pages. Mm-hmm. This represents the final, the last things, and I don't think any of them are super major issues, but these are the last things that the CAC wanted the committee to take a look at as possible edits. What we also created, this version 1 and version 2, as you all know, I was asked to track a working document, you know, change tower to support structure, get rid of repeaters, make all the updates.
Change it the whole time.
So I have two versions. Version 1 is a working copy of Article 99, only with the edits and actions approved by the committee before today. So it's not going to include these edits proposed today. And that's the one that Dave Wessner would like the committee to sign off on, that indeed this represents all the work we've done up till now, and I believe it does. Version 2 includes more, and I did this one because I think it would be a very helpful working document for Dave Wessner, in the sense that it includes some additional things, but it clearly identifies which ones are approved by the committee. Let's see. It identifies the edits approved word for word by the committee. It identifies the edits agreed to in concept by the committee and sent to the planning department for wordsmithing, which we did with some of our things. Mm-hmm. The edits suggested at a meeting but referred to the planning director for his decision, which we did at one of our other meetings. We took it as far as we could and said send it to the planning guy. The potential wording change, this was numbers 9, 10, and 14, just some wording changes that the committee instructed the CAC to submit directly to Dave for his consideration. The edits brought up for consideration today, which I was thinking the one update I would do to this document is after today when we've gone through these edits, then I'll put our decisions in here rather than the edits. And just potential edits that emerged in another reasonable manner, like towers to support structures and that kind of thing. So that in this document, everything is there in one place. So when Dave goes through, he doesn't have to pull this paper and where does that fit into here and where does that fit into here. It's kind of all in one place.
That's one that makes it easier. Give me a, if you would, please, you've got green, blue, and red. Writing in this.
Okay. Okay. In which one now? In the version 2?
Which denotes what? What color denotes what?
The red denotes actual edits that have been suggested. Okay. The blue is most, a lot of the blue is either explanation or comments where those edits came from. Like suggested additions, comments where they came from. And does this one have green? Green actually was in, there was one group of things that we took as far as we took and then said refer this to the planning department. And when we took it there, it was in green in the comments. So I'm just reproducing exactly the document as it was when we referred it.
So green is basically referred to the PD.
Yeah, it's rationale that we had discussed at our meeting. That was already down there at a meeting, and it was referring to the PD.
Second.
So what I have to bring to today's meeting is the final edits, section 13, these four pages of edits proposed to the committee. And as I said, most of them are not like sticky issues, or because one of them is some changes or additions to the definitions that we can go over quickly. So we can just, this would be the business for today that we're bringing up for today.
Okay, so it's the first time I've seen it. I haven't had any time to go over this. While we're kind of perusing it at the table, if Jim on the phone has perused them at all, does he have any input?
In regards to the, I just got these yesterday, and I might, like you, I'd rather have more time to conceive them from our membership, but I can. I can say as little or as much as you want me to say right now. Just let me know.
Okay, I just didn't know if you got them ahead of us where you had anything clarification-wise.
In terms of looking at the notes I have written down here, setbacks is something that our membership wanted to take a look at in terms of what would be a reasonable setback from a property site to provide a safe distance around. In the event of a tower failure, which very, very, very rarely happens, but the setbacks that are laid out right now would be fairly unworkable to sites and areas where they probably be needed. And there are also, we have suggestions in terms of stealthing options, so that we can conceal our sites better and provide just the kind of well-integrated cell sites that actually, still provide coverage. If they're going to have to be, above tree lines in such a situation, we don't want them to be an eyesore for you. So, but those are some preliminary notes I have. It'd be hard for me to comment specifically, especially since I'm not yet out of my car right now. Don't want to cause any traffic problems here.
Yeah, that probably explains why you're breaking up. A little difficult. Okay, we'll just continue on then, and you can contact Dave and Shabana with that.
I will do that. Sorry about that, guys.
So again, some of these are not really big deals at all.
Some of it, I like where it's just cleaning up some things, personal wireless, cellular, PCS. A tower is also a support structure, which would be accurate, as Stephen has agreed with that.
We might as well clarify, since we changed all the word tower within the thing to support structure, we might as well make it clear in the definition
Let's kind of run through them real quick then. Antenna, piece of equipment that transmits or receives RF signals versus the rest of the gobbledygook. Certainly makes a lot more sense. RF signals accurate for you guys?
An antenna is a piece of equipment that transmits or receives RF signals. Accurate.
And then antennas,
Okay.
Yeah, it's what it is.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I just want to make sure there's facility, a piece, unmanned structure or piece of equipment, which basically the county code's covering also, so that I don't see anything there. Facilities may include, seems okay. I'm just going to read through them. If you guys have any comments or anything, stop me when I'm there and say, I don't like it, whatever it is. But support structures, antenna base, other transmission reception devices, batteries, generators and or fuel tanks. Sounds like common sense. A facility is synonymous with a cellular/PCS service facility. Okay. Terminology, clarification.
Right.
Feasible to be defined by LUBA or per LUBA as meaning technologically possible irrespective of inconvenience or cost.
I have a major, major issue with that.
Yeah.
That violates the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Okay.
In what way?
Because you're saying that irrespective of inconvenience or cost. Part of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 says that, look, we're trying to make it to where it's cost-effective for people to put these towers in. If we say, look, it doesn't matter if you like it or not, you're going to have to go over here, well, you're talking about a major cost factor for some people. I'm going through that situation right now.
That I disagree that that has anything to do with the telecommunications, and we're just defining the word feasible.
Okay. Well, right now we're just going to mark it. I want to move through everything and then come back to what we have disagreements on, so we don't waste a lot of time. So I've got a big red flag of feasible. We'll investigate that and certainly look into it. Okay, minor modifications, compare improvements mods to existing cellular PCS facility support structure versus a core equipment shelter. That looks okay. And a tower is also a support structure. Clarification sentence, I see no fault with that. 99.060, halfway down, in the event required maintenance does not occur, the director is authorized to notify the property owner and carrier of the violation and require recertification within 45 days.
Hang on. Going awful fast.
Well, does the director, are you assuming the planning director?
This I didn't make this up. This is already there. Probably the planning director. Well, the only thing we did was make it more stringent if it happens to be a failure of excessive emissions above what FCC allows.
Right. In the event required maintenance of the director. So we had that at, I think, our very first meeting. So I'm going to underline director for clarification, because that could be the planning. If it is a failure of excessive emissions, this must be rectified within 5 days. Is there any federal in the Telecommunications Act?
I can research it. I'm not sure of what there is a penalty, and there is a time frame that you're allowed to, if you've got something that's in violation, they do give you some sort of a grace period. I'm not exactly sure what it is.
Okay, so we need to know what that grace period is, because we can't be more restrictive than the federal act.
Why not?
Because the feds say you have this much time. Federal government says you got 45 days, then we can't restrict it to 5 days when the federal...
Okay, so let's see what the TVA says about this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We'll answer the question. Mm-hmm. So what does the Fed say?
Yeah, the form.
And then the failure to resolve the violation within the aforementioned number of days works fine for me, because we've crossed out 45 and we're going to evaluate the 5, so aforementioned will be whatever it works out to be. So that makes sense and it flows. Constitute a declaration of abandonment, and the director should provide notice. So that'll all be covered under the feds too. So second page, 99.035. Newer modified facilities, antenna support structure, standard or approval, visibility. The facility and support structure will adhere to strict visual impact minimization and screening standards. Do we have standards defined yet?
That's a good question.
For screening?
Not at all. I don't remember.
Well, maybe these are the standards that come after.
So I'm going to put a note here, define standards.
Yeah. I think...
So that'll...
This was taken from another ordinance, so maybe what comes after are the standards that it's referring to.
And again, I'm just reading. If somebody has any hesitation besides me, chime in. Applicant will make the installation, operation, and appearance as visually inconspicuous as possible to prevent the facility from visually dominating the surrounding area and to hide the installation from predominant views from other properties.
Well, it's all the wording. I mean, how can you even define dominating surrounding area? These new words are new to me, so I'm just
okay. Define standard.
I don't know how you would define that if it came to an issue. It's
the planning.
Yeah, well, that would have to work in the standards. There would have to be a set base.
There you go. Sure.
Predominant views is going to have some kind of references. You know, are you 50 feet away or are you 500 feet away as to what a predominant view would be?
If you meet the setback requirements, I mean, there again, you're talking about someone driving down the street saying that they don't like it, whether they're cars or whether they live there or not.
Absolutely.
Right.
The standards would correct that if we get a set of standards, would they not, James?
You would think so, yeah.
Well, I'm going to assume that the standards, if we set some standards, we'll clarify that.
Mm-hmm.
And then 8 will be revisited. We'll finish it up here real quick. But we're going to revisit that for standards and proper wording. Actually, not so much proper wording, but the correct word of that. So predominant versus requirement versus whatever the standard will be set.
Mark, can I ask Steve a question?
No.
Steve, on number 9, under miscellaneous requirements, is that standard for the utilities to be underground?
Well, I was reading that right now, trying to think about that. It's becoming more prevalent as a preference to do it. It lasts longer, safer.
Some areas
here are trees, ice, it's right. Almost a preference.
James can probably answer that. I think most power and everything is required to go underground now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's in our code, actually, in our utility part of our ordinance.
So I know that's been changing, and we've worked that into the system the last few years. So.
Right.
You know, on most sites, you'd want it that way. I know the new USA site, that was $100,000 when we put the power in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
underground is preferred.
Yeah.
Less maintenance for guys who have to worry about trees and the snow weather.
Yeah, no, that back east don't get that.
Yeah. Well, then maybe this is too lenient because it implies that if you can't see it from any other property.
Well, what I don't understand is that
if you're going up a mountain,
there's already a county ordinance there, then why does this even need to be here?
Yeah, if you're saying it needs to be underground, then it wouldn't be visible because it's above ground.
Yeah,
so the visible thing is an issue.
County
which is vague in itself. Otherwise, it'd be visible from property. Well, I mean, goodness, if you see it way over there, I mean, how does that quantify?
So maybe just a period after it shall be placed underground, period.
Just you can reconfirm it, more or less, or reference the section.
I would reference
where the
What's the section? Let's just reference the...
Don't have my book with me at the moment, but...
Reference utility...
Requirements. Or
requirements.
Requirements.
Is that
for
OAR?
It's in our code, actually.
Yeah.
It's a section in our code.
JOCO code.
Yeah. Find out what that part is.
Okay, and then we'll just make it match the utility and that'll be done. But I know they're putting everything underground now anyway,
mm-hmm.
So... next is 1, requirements for co-location. We've struck out or use of repeaters because repeaters, pretty much as we've heard multiple times, are not really in existence anymore. Cannot accommodate the coverage requirements by co-location. The demonstration must meet or address the requirements. Item B, co-location sites are too far from the area needing coverage or cannot accommodate the necessary equipment instead of proposed equipment. At an adequate elevation necessary to fill the demonstrated gap in cell phone coverage by any technological feasible method.
See, that's tough. You know, we're in a situation right now, basically doing the same thing. In order for us to go and use another person's tower, it would cost me about $25,000 to upgrade my equipment to shoot the extra distance, and it's money that I don't have to do it. AT&T or U.S. Cellular or Verizon, then they would be able to do it, but it's a cost that I can't handle.
But you're not a cell site either, so it's not applicable.
Well,
you're trying to use their towers.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
In a way, it does affect because, it's hard to say, and then there's going to be, you're talking 700 people that aren't going to be able to have service, if we can't come up with the money to do it. I'm talking about...
Which one in here are you referencing that's the worst for you, or is the whole sentence bad for you? Give us some...
Well, see, technically, feasible method means, yes, can I get a signal to that tower? Well, if I upgrade my equipment, I can't. But they're saying that they don't care what it's going to cost me to do it. I think it does matter to me what it's going to cost because, okay, so I spend an extra $25,000, am I going to be able to recoup that money and can I afford to do that so I can actually get a signal to that tower?
But once again, this is talking about cell phone companies. This is talking about multi-billion dollar companies.
Okay, there's a proposed site going in right now. And the issues at hand right now is that U.S. Cellular has a site that's already been approved, so therefore we may not get our site approved because of how close it is to there.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't approve my site, then I don't get my new tower, so therefore I lose 600 clients because I can't use U.S. Cellular's tower because I can't reach their tower.
But but the standard is co-location, and if the cell companies can co-locate, if those towers are close enough, then another tower that, I'm sorry.
But we are going to be co-locating.
We're
going to be co-locating with the carrier. So why is it beneficial for them to co-locate with another company versus co-locating with me?
What's your take on
this? I'm trying to stay caught up on this. I don't fully understand all the dynamics at this point. Why? This would only apply to you if you're going to co-locate on their towers.
We are.
And that's the issue for you, right? Because that's what your plan is. Okay.
I think this law is. I hear that you personally get disadvantaged by something like this, but you know, this is a much bigger law, and yes, some people are going to get disadvantaged by it.
Okay, well let's continue our process we're in. I've got that one flagged, so we'll come back to it, and that will require more discussion. You know, for where we're going and what we're doing, let's get through what we can. Let's go down to C. The proposed equipment would exceed the structural spatial capacity of the existing facility support structures, and the existing facility support structures cannot be reinforced, modified, or replaced to accommodate co-location. And what's struck out is that reasonable cost.
And I don't. And the rationale behind this is I don't think the concern of the county and the cities. Well, first of all, reasonable is not definable, so this is not an enforceable law with that language in. You know, and I think it's our concern how we want to handle this in our county, how we want to serve and protect our citizens. The cost again to the multi-billion-dollar applicant of AT&T and Verizon is not our concern.
Agreed, and it's not a big deal to them either, actually.
I agree.
No, but it's a big deal to the little guy.
True. This is true.
But this is
as far as C.
So we got a C and D both reference the exact same sentence. At a reasonable cost has been struck out. Is there? How do I word this question? I'm not sure. Let me think about it for a second, but. We're striking out a reasonable cost, but James, if at a reasonable cost is not definable or there's no standard for such,
that makes it difficult.
What standard could be replaced for that that would be beneficial to all parties?
Gonna have to think about that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then let's flag those at reasonable cost, and we'll read about the. Let's make sure that's fair to all. Two, justification of need and location. IMA has documented the proposed facility support structure is necessary to close a significant gap in service coverage or capacity for that provider. And then what's read is that all available alternative technologies which might be effectively employed to provide adequate coverage from existing support structures or existing support structure sites have been investigated and are proven not to be technologically feasible.
Well, that seems fair enough.
Well, the red's what they want to take out.
No.
No, the striking is what they're taking out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
So, yeah, it seems okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No other arguments there. The next suggestion
I suggest we send to Dave. I think it's beyond what this committee. Well, you can read it.
I'll read it because we're taking it and it's on the record. But
yeah.
And I was reading the blue as you were chiming in there. So. Blue and highlighted, we have the suggested edit as a complicated point of law. It doesn't seem to be within the purview of this committee. We suggest it be referred to the PD for its direct consideration, which we do as we are required. I'm going to read down mostly through the paragraph and start in the black. In order to be considered, alternative sites must be available and technologically feasible. What's struck out is applicants' evidence need only establish a prima facie basis for concluding the proposed facility antenna towers is the least intrusive option. I kind of don't like the least intrusive anyway, but additional alternative sites may be considered by the review body in order to rebut applicants' assertion that their choice is the least intrusive. So we are going to, that's all. Thank you. I'll call you tomorrow. Sorry about that. We've already got this blue and highlighted for the note. I'm just going to mark it on my page for final consideration. PD. PD always referring to the planning director for anyone not a... Because we're not going to get into legal stuff here. It's mm-hmm. not what our purview is. Monitoring. Blue. Provision for monitoring is a new trend in most recent ordinances around the country. Basically allows the county and public to be assured no sites slip out of FCC compliance become a public danger. The PAC, the William CAC, will note, respectively submits this section for inclusion in the ordinance, knowing that it might benefit from the PD's wordsmithing and or utilizing monitoring sections of other relevant ordinances as models. And they're suggesting that we insert section 99.045, monitoring and eval of initial and ongoing emission compliance. Now, we kind of talked about ongoing emission compliance. Pre-testing, after the granting of a conditional use permit and before the facility begins transmission, the applicant shall pay for an independent consultant radio frequency engineer chosen and hired by the planning department to assess the background levels of EMF radiation around the proposed facility site and at an appropriate distance from it, up to and including 1,500 feet. I'm going to stop right there first.
That's, like, as far as my knowledge goes, not how it would be done. I don't know where this wording or how this came to be. Like, out of some other...
And that it came out of another ordinance, but it seems a bit messy, and that's why I said that
technically it's not,
it might benefit from wordsmithing or looking at other ordinances.
Well, technically it's not how it's ever done. After granting conditional use and before it begins transmission, background levels of EMF radiation. Well, if the thing's not transmitting, there won't be any.
Well, first, there may be other antennas there. They may be co-locating. There may be three other antennas already transmitting.
You're right.
So it's the base level co-located. And then where it goes.
Okay. The problem is that maybe this is a trend, I don't know, but in my knowledge, it's never measured appropriate distances. There are no appropriate distances because there's no standards by the industry to say, oh, we go out at this distance and measure it as representative of this. Field strength exists, and you go at any distance and measure what that might be. And it's a matter of radiation per square footage type thing. But for someone to go out at any, what was the word? Appropriate distance out and make measurements. How it is done in the industry is it gets measured inside the building. If you want to know what the radiation is outside, you put a watt meter or a spectrum analyzer, you measure the amount of radiation that the transmitters are emitting. And it can't, nothing more could be outside than what they were starting with in the first place.
But I thought you said, what you were talking about is how. It's out there.
That's an
umbrella effect.
Well, it has shape, yes. But my point being, you're saying, like, appropriate distance will take measurements. Sure, there will be a value, but there's no, first off, appropriate distance, and that value can't, what it should be can't exceed if the transmitter is putting out what it should. And that's done by hugely expensive test equipment. So it's done inside the site with measurement of the system. Nobody ever just goes out to some appropriate distance and makes those measurements. This is like, I think from a technical standard, they looked at us and said, we'd be locked out of the room again.
So I don't have the technical expertise. And as I said, even in reading this through as a layperson, I felt like, you know, the wording is kind of cumbersome. It would be good to look at the
The application is like wrong.
So it's the principle that we're talking. So
it's not applicable. It's not done this way. I don't want to seem like fools here.
No, let me ask this question.
Up with this.
Since they're proposing it, there is a standard or a maximum allowable?
Not really, no.
Okay. Oh, yes, the FCC is, of course, it's a maximum allowable. But that's the whole...
You could put it this way. If certain equipment... If the FCC will grant what it was designed to do. They're going to show these patterns and all that based on a transmitter putting out certain power, certain type of antennas and all that. It's where there really isn't necessarily a maximum allowable. In other words, okay, maximum allowed based on what it was engineered as. That's what you're saying for that given site, which would be determined by making the measurements inside to see that it doesn't exceed outside.
Now, all I know is it's very clear in the TCA that the FCC has maximum emission standards and that...
But it's on a per-case basis. There's no real maximum.
I don't know.
Well, and that's not what we're talking about anyway. We're talking about measuring it. My problem is measuring it at appropriate distances.
I don't have any problem with re-looking at this technologically.
Let's
re-look
at it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we should re-look at it, or if this is a joke. I can't let that. We'll flag that, and we'll send it up to the planning director.
But your appropriate distance, again, is you can't be any more vague than that.
There isn't one set by the industry. And again, if you want to know what it is at a given distance, you make these measurements with this test equipment, you know?
Well, here's what I'm trying to get an answer to. Maybe this will help clarify the things.
Okay.
When you, whatever it is, you design a system, your system has capacity, and it's approved at that capacity,
EIRP.
Yeah, and we got to take it, not that this is necessary to take into account, but when you say capacity, that generally means the amount of people talking, as we already talked about, that varies.
Well,
everything is, but
okay, it's the amount of output. How's that?
Okay, very good.
Okay, is there any, as I'm understanding this, every tower and everything that goes up is not universal across the board. Everyone
totally.
Is independent and different.
Yeah, everyone's different.
So there is no base standard that everybody says this is our minimum and we move forward.
Very true.
Point. Okay.
But there's a maximum.
So that's my first question. Is there's no standard?
No, it would be based on what the site was shown as engineered out as, and it's either, you know, yes, he doesn't even really look at that to prove that. They're given a licensed area. They can damn near do what they well please. I know you don't like to hear that, but the equipment is only made to put out so much anyway. It's
right.
All minimum. It's cellular, and they et cetera. They can back it down. They can turn it up. But sometimes they change. If they put in another cell site here, they very well may turn this one down, so they don't interfere. So it's really what they have to do. As far I know, your concern maximum is they don't want to exceed some maximum, but they're as far as I know. And I'm having trouble with...
There is.
Okay.
FCC maximum. That's referred
we
to.
We will.
That's based on the limitation of the equipment when the equipment was built.
But as more and more equipment is added to the same site...
But what you don't seem to understand is if I have two radios running 900 megahertz...
Oh,
and I have them both on the same tower, and I'm going to create my own interference for myself. If I turn them up and I crank them up full blast, like the FCC says I can run 26 dB on mine, all right, if I crank them both up at 26 dB, I'm going to create interference for myself.
Here's what she needs to hear. She doesn't care about that. Plus, there's filters and all that. It's just too weird. What you want to know is you're trying to say that if more towers come, more antennas, more people turn things up, will there not be a radiation hazard at a given distance exceeding some maximum?
Is that what you're...
There are maximums, there are indeed maximums set for exposure, for human exposure to radiation. And you can actually wear badges that if you get in an area that exceeds that, these aren't real accurate, but it can't exceed that. When you climb towers, you put them on. Okay. None of the cellular stuff will exceed that. We're talking high power levels when we start talking like that, but we're almost getting like broadcast and stuff. Two-way at 100 watts isn't even regulated in that regard. Plus, and it's not so defined such that if it's 100 watts here at this level, it can only be 80 at 30 feet down. There are no standards for that, for radiation exposure to humans within the cellular industry. There is if you're like up and around them and stuff. There are levels, but out at distances, it's already 2 weeks. That isn't regulated. If another carrier came, there would be more radiation. If that in itself is not regulated by the FCC. Radius exposure to distance to humans.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's
We can go back or whatever, but...
Well, hopefully that's what you're trying to ask for is some kind of measurement.
The FCC has a limit.
Okay.
And what I'm asking, what's become a trend, is that once a year the applicant will pay, if the county decides, or if someone from the public requests once a year, it will be measured and make sure that they're still within the FCC standards.
Okay. So first off, without having any reference to what the standards are of the FCC here, I got nothing to go on, so I can't go for that. But I'm flagging it. We'll put the reference to co-locating in the FCC rules. Because we can't just reference something that doesn't give us a reference point to go back to. We have to reference it to a ordinance, a standard.
And my personal opinion is it's I don't want to use it this way. I was going to say undue. I feel it's an unnecessary hardship on the carrier. I have never used those terms in here before, unnecessary hardship on the carrier, have I? No. I'm not biasing with them. But from a technical standpoint, I think it's a little heavy-handed and out of context because, again, if they're not going to just arbitrarily turn these things up, it'll interfere with other cell sites. They're so tightly engineered, be off the charge for us, timing, direction, power levels. They're not just arbitrarily change things because they want more. More won't work. It'll screw things up. What it was designed as, what it will stay to be. This $200,000 equipment doesn't change on its own, and they just don't get diddling with it because it's a nice day. So,
okay.
So my personal comment is to require them to go once a year with an independent consultant medical is, it's just not how it works. It's not.
Is there, once a tower is up, is there any FCC or federal requirements for, I want to say maintenance, but maintenance isn't the right word.
Monitoring?
I doubt it. I couldn't say. I don't believe the FCC has those requirements. I don't believe they do. No.
FCC does the monitoring when they want to do their monitoring, how they want to do their monitoring.
And it's never in the cellular industry. They're worried about other weird, bizarre stuff that needs taken care of. These guys take care of themselves.
Well, they care more about the radio stations than they do cell towers.
Well, et cetera.
Right. Well, they're taking more wattage, so.
Et cetera. Yeah, absolutely.
So we're gonna have that TV. Investigate that one because that could be, and the once a year and the independent twice within 30 days seems a little cumbersome.
Yeah,
there's no. Yeah, because you're saying before they power up, they have to have it independently tested, and then within 30 days.
Oh, that's the very beginning.
They got to have it tested.
Well, it's not even powered up. You can't test it. So all this is just like making us look like idiots.
She was basically what she was saying: test the site. So.
Right, measuring what was there, right, already. If it's co-located, well, there's nothing there, but, yeah.
Okay, so that needs evaluated because we, you know, I don't know that that's not going to be an undue burden in that time frame.
Well,
there are other ways to do it without doing that.
Well, we can certainly look at that. I'm not saying not to, but, you know, like if they're only requiring, and I don't know anything, but you know, saying every 5 years. I mean, Steve's point is it's detrimental for the cell sites to increase the output because it actually hurts them.
Yeah, and their signal
and their customers.
Yeah, I'm not approaching it from a hardship because of dollars and cents to hire someone to do it. It just doesn't make sense to do it because it's something that's not really applicable. It just isn't.
Okay.
And if they change things 10 or 15% out there, they've got an issue. 10 or 15% in real world is almost nothing to as far as radiation. It's inconsequential. I mean, it sounds like another cell site doubles it up, but...
Okay. Well, let's keep going. You know, we've had a little bit of discussion on that. So we need some more official notice and official...
I guess in closing, if it's engineered out to be what it is, you're not going to find that it's going to change. So having them hire someone to try to prove it is just like, I know you think my word is not going to change. Well, it doesn't. These things are maintained to be such that they're not changed. Designed, maintained, anyway.
Okay. And then item two is kind of the same thing within 30 days. So we're going to tack that as item one. In blue, we got this is the only way that county citizens can independently verify what EMF is actually resulting from adding new antennas and that the total EMF from the site always remains within the regulations. Well, again, Steve's point is they're designed.
Well, yeah, and you know, maybe, and the problem I would like to see from my own education
what the FCC regulations do say about cellular power levels at given distances, and what a typical cell site or excessive cell site could even come close to something like that. I still think it's kind of not applicable, but I sure would like to know that.
Okay, well, we'll ask that question and have somebody answer.
I hope I'm not cutting out right now. We just went through an extensive training on that specific issue. I just sent you all the information. We had two engineers come in, one from the state of Washington and another one from, I think, a university, a local university. I'll send you guys everything I got on that. I apologize if you can hardly hear me.
We hear you real good. This is Steve. Quick question. Is it your general assumption, I mean, would this be applicable to say at this point, that as far as the stooling and testing and measurement processes, radiation badges, human health hazards, would you say that generally applies when they're climbing the tower endeavor that is applicable on the cell site, let alone out the perimeter, out in some field in the distance?
Well, if you're on a tower wrapping your arms around an antenna, yes. If you do that long enough, there's going to be an issue.
Then and only then.
But outside of that, I mean, I can send you the data in terms of what it's like compared to watching your television for an hour. But I don't want you to take my word for it. I want you to see the studies that we were trained on.
Gotcha. But
I don't pretend to be an expert, but I'm here to listen and report back to you guys. And I'm taking notes that where am I going to fill in information. I'm going to send you the presentation that we were trained on.
Gotcha.
Okay, that'd be helpful. If you'll get it to Ann, she can disseminate it amongst the group. Thank you. And that might make a lot more sense and a lot more understanding of that. Because right now we don't know what they're saying, and we're kind of guessing and referencing FCC regs, but we don't know what those regs are. We should have a code or a line item or a 36.030 type reference that says, here, we need to go look here.
Yeah,
we have something to tell us.
Yeah, and if there are certain numbers, is the co-location site getting close to any percentage of what is considered harmful? And if the FCC doesn't consider harmful at all, we really have a cyclic issue in Minnesota.
Okay.
As long as you're not saying otherly numbers.
So we got that going to 3. There shall be the option of similar annual monitoring of the EMF site, which we just had that discussion, and we're going to waylay the annual monitoring.
This
until
is all the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to hold off 3 and 4 and just let that whole thing be reevaluated.
Right.
And yeah, we do have to get some more referencing, and especially if we're going to build standards, we need to know a little more information. But the work's good. You're moving us, you're steering things in a direction. We always do appreciate that. So, all in all, not too bad. We've got the 2. Okay, we've gotten through the whole thing. Let's jump back to, on page 1, we had the J, the feasible. Does anyone have any more input on that, or do we want to hold that for the planning director? James, I'm going to let you chime in first and see what you reference.
Yeah, I don't think we have a feasible definition in our staff report.
No, and the reason this came up was because very recently there was a challenge to the law. There was a case like this that went in front of the Ashland City Council, and it was AT&T. And the task that the AT&T took to try to challenge the law was challenging the meaning of feasible.
Okay.
And that's why this came up. If they're going to go to the point of challenging the meaning of feasible, and what the Ashland City Council decided is feasible means what Luba says feasible means, what all the courts say. That's how they defined feasible. I mean,
did that case actually go to Luba?
No, they took other... AT&T was asking for this very... Okay. In my opinion, unrealistic and ridiculous interpretation of feasible, and what the opposing came up with was they came with all the court cases that Luba defined feasible.
Okay. Okay. Do you already have that available to you, so you could pass that over to James without James having to go research that off?
What? I mean,
the Ackland and the court cases that were referenced?
No, I don't have court cases.
That's something we can probably dig up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she had it already.
Yeah.
Since she's referencing it, I figured she saw it somewhere.
So this is what made me realize that we have to go to the point of defining what feasible is.
Okay. Okay, so that's the reason that's in there. You can make a note on that.
Sure.
And that gives a little better clarity and understanding, so there's a reason for it. So the next one I had flagged was on the second page on the co-location. We'll spend another minute or two on that. Co-location sites are too far from the needing coverage or cannot accommodate the necessary equipment versus the proposed equipment. Keith and Chad would have to answer. I don't see an issue with necessary, but if you say that, Mark, at an adequate elevation necessary to fill the demonstrated gap in the cell phone coverage. Taz, I think, had the issue with the technologically feasible statement.
What exactly is being defined as a co-locate?
Well, we've been addressing cellular, so that would be more than one carrier on the tower.
Okay, so I don't mean to interrupt you.
Well, just to give the context of what this is, if we go back up to criteria for approval, these criteria apply to in order to get a new facility or a new support structure, rather than having to co-locate, it has to meet these requirements. So they're saying one of the things it has to meet is that co-location sites where there already is a tower, for example, are too far from the area needing coverage or cannot accommodate the necessary equipment at an adequate elevation necessarily to fill the demonstrated gap in coverage by any technologically feasible method. That's one of the requirements so that they can have a new tower rather than have to co-locate.
Well, it kind of does, but I still... In terms of what we're doing here, what is being defined as a co-locate?
It's when you, the strict co-locate is when you put your antennas on an already existing support.
A cellular carrier.
Yeah,
yeah.
Cellular.
So it's not.
Well, no, I'm not talking about me.
Okay, so that new tower that's going in Grants Pass, let's say that was county business versus city business. And the county decided that they wanted to go up to U.S. Cellular AT&T and say, hey, can we hang this antenna on your tower? Would they be subject under these rules to determine whether or not their emission, the RF emissions are going to be too high? Or would they fall under the same criteria because it is a cell site?
No, because it's not a cell carrier going in. You're asking somebody else to go in. This is applicable to cellular PCS only.
Well, I think that her main consideration is radiation. It doesn't matter if it's U.S. cellular.
Well, if you get back to the FCC, the FCC license will dictate what that next provider is and can do.
Well,
it's based on height above average terrain and all that.
I understand that and you understand that,
okay.
But it doesn't seem like there's a lot of people here who understand that.
We have a problem with that.
I don't have one blowing it up. Well, I'm just trying to get clarification.
Well, I understand the clarification point, and I think it's valid. Steve's saying it's not having an issue, but the rest of us at the table, me specifically,
if you're worried,
I wouldn't understand it as much. You know, if I wasn't sitting here at the table all day, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
If you're worried about two cell carriers on a tower emitting RF, are you worried about two cell towers and a city Wi-Fi, a fire department, and kind of
no.
Why are you not worried about them when they transmit at higher power rates than some cellular services?
That's not what we're regulating. That's not what this committee is about.
That's right.
Yeah, well, that's this question. Do we have a definition of co-locate? Is it separate carriers? Or is it separate heights on the antenna?
Well, it's both. Number C.
You can't have one without the other. See?
We do have a...
I can read it for you.
The
use of a single wireless telecommunication tower for the placement of multiple antennas or related telecommunication equipment, often involving different carriers.
Now you're saying other telecommunications equipment. Whereas before we had wording that, you know, did specify, you know, we were excluding broadcast and all sorts of things. So if we want to look at that carefully, that should be changed as well.
And
right.
Cellular PCS.
Because that,
The use of a single cellular / PCS support structure for the placement of multiple antennas or related telecommunication equipment. So the question is related telecommunication equipment accurate?
Is it related to the carrier or is it related to the tower?
It's related to the cellular PCS system.
Should we change that to related cellular PCS equipment versus telecommunications?
Well, maybe
that makes everybody happy. Sure. Well,
sure, but why does EC related at all? I mean, if it's related, it's already there. If it's there, it's what they proposed, and it was already agreed upon. It seems like backward redundant or forward redundant or something.
Yeah,
because
redundancy is typical around here. So.
Well, it may be other equipment in addition to antennas.
No, that's all that goes on towers, unless you got a light. So it's like awkwardly redundant.
Okay, so maybe that should come out, or related.
No, because you have to have a reference for co-location.
Just all related telecommunications equipment.
Yeah, exactly.
So either strike it or related cell PCS equipment. Either one would work.
Let's do all related cellular PCS.
Which is the same thing of itself in the first place.
We understand that, because it's a reference, we have to leave it in the references. Okay, so we still have it. We'll have the change. We'll have the 99.035 item B, 9.1B co-location site. I still want to have that reviewed and just make sure that we're within.
Where is it?
Page 2.
Yeah.
9.1 Bravo. Co-location sites. Let's make sure that's reviewed and everybody's comfortable with it.
Okay.
Still with the flag. And then we get down to, after Bravo, we got Charlie and Delta, which both at reasonable costs have been stricken. What is reasonable, again, is one of those vague words when you're dealing with the ordinance.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Should that be stricken, or should there be a different word put in that location? Should there be a cost factor reference?
No, it's out of our wherewithal. I mean, as far as base of knowledge and base of authority, you know, too much of their loss, I mean, not for us to say. Can't even hit that.
So you have no problem with the reasonable cost being removed or being stricken?
Suppose not.
The proposed equipment would significantly impact the usefulness of other equipment at the existing facility, and the impact cannot be mitigated or prevented.
I think it should be CND, it violates the communications act.
Okay, so that's what I didn't write down.
And I disagree.
What do we got going?
Fairly clearly states in the Telecommunications Act that we're not supposed to pass any laws or ordinances that can make it a cost prohibitive for someone to put in a tower. But yet everybody at this table is now saying that, well, it doesn't matter. They have billions of dollars, so we can charge them whatever the hell we want. I think that's ludicrous. Just because they have money, that we should put something in here to make them have to pay more. To me, it doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
Well, aren't we justifying the need for a new tower if it can't go for these reasons and you're at existing? And you're saying the cost is the issue.
Well, if they're saying, look, I can't come over here and use this tower because of what it's going to cost me to do it here, it's going to be cheaper if I do it here.
Well, the cost would be because it's full and would have to be replaced.
No, otherwise it's cheaper. Not necessarily.
How?
Well, it's cheaper to co-locate than to build your own, or you can't locate if it's full. If it's full, it needs to be replaced.
That's not necessarily
true. Well, that's what I'm asking. What am I missing?
But it would depend on what the factors are involved in each location. But the Telecommunications Act strictly says that this is a cost factor thing, that the reason why they put this in place to begin with, they are trying to make it to where it's cheaper for them to put these things in, and we're coming here, we're saying, well, no, we really don't care.
Cheaper to put these things in? I'm not following that either.
Did no one read the Telecommunications Act?
No, I read it.
No. I'm not sure.
Okay, so we're going to leave them flagged. Chaz is making a point that he believes it conflicts with the Federal Telecommunications Act, so we need to answer that question. Shabana disagrees with that, but we need to have a PD to answer that question authoritatively.
Wow. So
that's okay. That's what we're here for. We'll get an authoritative decision on that. And I think that's about it. I think everything else is going to be here.
I'll make sure I do.
Notes or. So we made some progress. We still got some things that need to be authoritatively answered.
To version two.
Okay.
I'm going to bring up something that's to the point when we actually try to dot the I's and cross the T's and all that. This came up a long time ago, but I'm just trying to help out. For instance, version 2, I don't see page numbers in here.
Yeah.
But if we go to where it opens and then says at the top, 2, electromagnetic radiation emission standards.
Can you tell us what page that comes from the beginning?
Well, sure. Yeah, we'll have it up there essentially. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Got it.
Okay, like the third line down, D, sufficient room, width, around support structure for 10 runs of 7/8 coaxial cable. That needs to read engine 5/8. Because nobody uses 7/8 anymore.
Okay, what does it need to read?
It needs to be engine 5/8. They won't go bigger than that.
I'm just not understanding the word.
7/8 is changing to 1 inch and 5/8
inch. Correct. Instead of 7/8 inch, it's 1 5/8 inch.
7/8 is obsolete.
Because we don't care, and that's way too small, and if it's restricted to that, they say, well, you guys don't know what's going on. So,
okay.
So
a nice catch. You can make it accurate.
Yeah.
Okay. James, are you prepared to...
Yeah.
The outline, we'll move forward with that.
David apologizes. He got called out on the budget meeting. He was going to be presenting his, basically the outline of the ordinance that he has in his mind on how the structure is to work.
And that's the one that we have.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So it's his outline on how he can implement an ordinance.
Yeah, and it basically...
I didn't have it at the last minute. Jim?
Jim, you still with us?
Who?
Was he driving?
No,
yeah. That's all that road noise. What's going on?
I'm not driving anymore, but I can hear you guys. I apologize for any inconvenience, and I appreciate your patience. What can I do for you?
Okay. I have a outline that was drawn up by our planning director.
Yes.
That basically kind of lays out his the construction or layout of his proposed ordinance.
Yeah.
The original ordinance he wasn't too keen on. He didn't like the way it was laid out.
Okay.
So he made some changes, some refinements, and kind of drew up an outline. That's what we're looking at right now.
And they don't have.
Okay.
Yeah, and you don't have that apparently.
Because
I am online. If Anne would like to email that to me, I can be with you virtually.
I can go do that.
She can do that.
Fantastic. Go ahead, proceed as if I got it for me. I'll try to keep up with that.
Okay.
Thank you, James.
Sure. The things in yellow are just samples of text that he had basically places to refine what this committee comes up with, places to insert what the committee comes up with. It's basically something that he had written one of these ordinances in a previous in his previous jurisdiction, and he liked it, and so he's kind of followed the same format that he did there. To go through it, the purpose statement, applicability of the ordinance. If you can forgive me here, he was supposed to be giving this presentation. This was dropped on me about 2 minutes before the meeting started. So, for the most part, what he really wanted you guys to see, this is his preferred way of writing this ordinance. This is what it's going to look like. The information that comes out of this subcommittee and planning commission, he's going to incorporate it into this format. So that's more or less what we're trying to do here. Instead of going page by page. Really, that's all I have. It was more informative for you guys to take a look at. This is the first time for all of you seeing it. So take it in, take it home, look over it, see if you have any questions, those kind of things.
It's got the performance bond in here, which I know we're doing a lot on the PUDs and stuff to cover the roads.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a time frame on that?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm not aware of that the performance part of it. Like I said, this was his first shot. He wrote this in like an hour before the meeting. So.
It's just a question, because on the PUDs, we do it's a 2 or 3 year to make sure your road's not going to fail, that you're going to have to pay. I mean, they're not going to have an unlimited. You've got to sit $75,000 in a bank account for 500 years.
I'm sure that we could work in some things, some limitations there.
That's just something to flag that me real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that he's going to take kind of the content that we discussed here and try to put it into this
fit form. It into this format, yes, that's correct.
And where in this format would it talk about co-location and then non-co-location?
Let's see.
Co-location evaluation study.
Yeah,
requirements.
Permit application requirements.
All be under there.
Yeah.
Well, it may, I'm sure he'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But application requirements is one thing, but the, first choice is co-location,
right.
And if it doesn't satisfy this, and this, then we go to the next.
Yeah, that's definitely something we want to hear then. We want to make sure that we get those areas covered.
Well, you could change our, just say co-location. That's good. Instead of co-location evaluation study, just put all co-location in one spot and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know that's what I was
thinking.
Yeah.
That's right.
Evaluation,
yeah.
That's our concerns.
Any opinion setbacks, landscape, height, parking, dispersal?
It would probably be under standards.
Yeah.
Most likely. That would be the place for it.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry I wasn't more detailed, but given my circumstances,
that's all.
We had a meeting Monday night with the Planning Commission and the director of the airport, and that was one of the things that we just kind of quickly highlighted in our meeting as we were doing the overlays of the airport and the feds, free zoning stuff we got to update on. And we referenced the cell towers and flight paths and that kind of stuff. So anything that's in that, as far as the airport goes, has to go by the airport director. So
and
it goes to the FCC and the airport.
The FAA,
they
highly regulate tower siting big time.
Yeah. So I'm just bringing that up in the minutes so we have it.
There's a thing called Tower. It, you go to their website, you type in the coordinates, it tells you if you're too close to an airport or if you're too close to a runway. And there's a lot of different variations of what they say you can and can't do. It depends on how long the runway is, depends on how far away you are,
what angle you are from it,
what angle you are. But all of the guys who are putting in towers, they know that they have to go and put those coordinates in, and it tells them if they have to get permission from the FAA or not to put the tower in.
Right.
So.
And we talked about it. He says the FAA comes out once a year and they sit on the tarmac with the 20% implementer and they just sit there and do a horizon to horizon and look and see and make sure things in the flight path or.
Yeah.
you know, and they go trees, buildings, towers, anything. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just bringing it up since we just covered that Monday night that, you know, that is one of the things that does happen if it's anywhere near an airport zone. So I don't know if Shivana knew that stuff or not.
And it doesn't matter county or state.
It doesn't matter.
If it's an airport in California and you live in Oregon and your tower is too close to that airport in California, FAA will come shut you down.
And they also require lighting if it's in the path or something.
Right. There's FAA requirements on that. And what it's saying, we had the airport director here in a meeting we had Monday night with the Planning Commission where we were discussing, because it's not just the runway that you're referencing. They actually have, I think I've got it in my card too, but they actually drew it's like a football stadium where you've got the center where the football's played, but then you've got the bleachers. Well, the airport is the same way. You have an outlying overlay. The height, you know, from center point A to this has to be, you know, 20%. Nothing can go above that. So it restricts them right now. I think it's 35 feet within is the maximum you can have within any overlay area. So 35 feet is pretty small. You're not going to put a whole lot of tower on a 35 foot. But there is we called it a virtual egg shape around the airport zone. And that's all controlled by the FAA, and it's all set, preset. And he said they come out once a year, and they sit there with an inclinator, or inclometer.
Inclinometer.
I knew I'm going to get there. And they just stand there on the field, and they do this. Anything that falls in the view of that, cut that tree down, move that building, move whatever, that's all controlled by them. And he said once a year they're there on every airport. So, just so you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone have anything else on this?
Well, based on our last discussion, which was a lot of safety related, fire related, rescue related, location related, all that kind of stuff, I had a conversation with Tyson Schultz. He's one of their fairly main guys with the Oregon Department of Forestry, and he tends to oversee a lot of the radio concerns since they use it a lot, and explained to him that we were curious, had concerns about the Oregon Department of Forestry's needs, concerns, or opinions, wants, desires for cell siting and location and stuff. He said, no, they basically don't, because nobody is really keeping an current enough to make much difference, GIS overlay, graphical interface thing where they have all these mappings and such, to where no one in the ODF would take responsibility to do it. They didn't feel it was necessary, and they were concerned that no one else either was. My point, again, being high-end electronic mapping, which everybody uses now to include specific cell sites on the current for a timely manner. He said they would treat it no different than any other location by either a reporting party saying it's smoking and giving a general description, or the cell tech themselves calling in saying a given location, be it latitude and longitude or quarter mile off of 199 off of road B or something, which, so that was there was no particular concerns from the Oregon Department of Forestry. And then he reiterated they would not attack the structure anyway, they would stand by and mitigate any wildland concerns. It was also mentioned, discussed a little bit about rescue. If someone was on a tower and people in the city, public would say, well, the city only has a 70-foot ladder truck and they want to put a 90-foot tower over by Club Northwest. All that. I want you folks to at least understand that the cell technicians do not climb. They'll go inside and mess with equipment. They don't carry climbing gear. It's illegal for them to climb. They're not authorized to climb. They're not even trained to climb. Any tower work is done by a fully licensed, insured, bonded, schooled, accredited climbing team from some company, which is trained and on-site with simple things they would already have that would facilitate a rescue. Clipping it with additional pulley and a fall arrestor and a harness and a sender, descender, all this stuff is what they would do. So a typical cell site guy doesn't need rescue on the tower. He's not on it. Qualified crews, if they did, they would do that.
regarding, there was questions regarding the network operations centers having a clue who to call after hours. If you're in New York, you can't dial 901 to get Josephine County to report that problem. There are always, 24 hours a day, a cellular technician in a given location responsible for all equipment in his designated area. If there was any concerns, the network operations center would notify him to start looking into it, and B, if there was any degree of concern at all, it would be his responsibility locally determine what is necessary, calling 911 if necessary. If he's the cell tech locally, he's going to get the local 911, and they will respond. There's always a supervisor overseeing a general region as well, but there's always 24/7 local techs. And even the adjacent county tech would have enough information to know about it. And the other guy's area, because they have overlapping information, they have to cover for each other because major outages and the area has to be covered as far as response time. So that's all kind of handled, figured out to answer some of those concerns.
That's good information.
They're on it, in other words. No,
we talked about the knock before, but we didn't get into the...
Well, I looked into this more since the last meeting, and that's what I came up with.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. Item 4 on the agenda was inspection schedules. If Jim's still with us.
Yes, I am.
Okay, are you... I heard you're prepared to go over some stuff, so go ahead.
Yeah, I've got stuff outside. I looked into it, and I talked with maybe 6 different people from different parts of the telecommunications industry to get a feel for what the inspection requirements are, and the answers came back generally the same. It's a 3-year one inspection every 3 years on your typical guide tower, which is what you'll probably see in Josephine County, the taller ones. The guide towers being the taller towers with the guide wires coming off of them, you know, attached to the ground. The shorter towers being your monopoles, cell sites that are, you know, fixed to the side of a building. Those are inspected every 5 years, not every 3 years. And in addition to the safety structural inspections, there are also sites that are typically every 2 to 3 months. Just, I think the name is Steve was mentioning the site techs go to those sites pretty regularly to look at, you know, just making sure there aren't, you know, pushes over going into the ground space. They look up at the tower, but they don't do an actual safety inspection. But they do look at everything to make sure it's, you know, operating smoothly. But if it's not, as you mentioned, you know, they're responsible for getting it back online.
Did you find if those the 3 and the 5 years? Cause we really the only guy towers I know we have around here is their radio stations. But nothing
I'm
on
sorry,
stuff.
You cut out on that. What was the question one more time?
The only towers I'm aware of with radio stations that have the guide towers.
And of those, they're all on federal land, be it BLM or Forest Service. And I don't really know how that integrates or doesn't integrate, but that would be a fact.
Well, my question would
mostly.
Be the 3 and the 5 year inspection. You've talked to all these different jurisdictions. Is there any... Is that just a number they all agree on? Is there some Fed guideline or anything you're aware of?
Well, the agency, there are a number of different agencies that regulate the telecommunications industry. What they're called typically is TIA inspections. TIA standing for, I think it's Tower Inspection. I forget what the A might stand for, but anyway, what they do is they set the standards, and I think typically your Verizon, your AT&T, your T-Mobile, your Sprint, you know, the folks that would own and operate the towers, Crown Castle, American Tower Corporation, the big ones that own 90% of the towers out there, they follow those standards to the T. That's what I was told, and what I did is I emailed maybe a dozen different folks and told them, you know, there's a team down in Josephine County looking, you know, to this question. I don't know the answer. Can you please help me? And that was the answer I got from everybody saying, hey, Jim, good to hear from you. You know, here's the rules we follow, and the 5 years for the non-guide towers, the 3 years for the guide towers, and inspections every quarter. Those were the answers I got pretty much uniformly, or they said, I don't know.
Okay. Well, it's nice that there's some, because the TIA inspections is something new we haven't heard of before, so we can certainly look at that, and if that's a guideline that the industry's following, then we can reference that in the ordinances, and we'll have a basis for it.
Yeah, And I'm sorry, who's the gentleman that's speaking right now? I apologize. I've been trying to keep track of names. I know there's this Steve that I was listening to, and a James, but who's this person?
Yeah, I'm Ron. I'm the county planning chair.
Yes. Ron, okay, I have your name right now. Ron, I have notes written to myself, you know, as best I could throughout. I just been on a long drive, in case you hadn't noticed. I'm listening in, and I'm going to send you guys everything I have that will hopefully provide you references. To answer questions about, you know, disguising cell towers, you know, see them, you know, in terms of visual impacts, radio frequency, EMF emissions, science that I have references to. I'm going to send you guys everything I have to use or not use as you wish, but no, I do have that information. And I'll forward you the emails that I got from the different folks in the wireless industry to answer your question about regular inspections as well.
Okay, well, that's kind of nice, though. I kind of like the 5-year inspection. That's a reasonable time frame. It's not an undue burden at that point, I wouldn't figure, and it should be implementable in the ordinance.
You also have Paul Soapmaker with,
yep,
Jim, and it also describes, each of you have a copy of this email where it describes the other inspections, foundation bolt connections, all sorts of things.
Right, but that one didn't reference the TIA, which Jim,
yep,
did, so...
No, and Paul, I think, has a family obligation, otherwise he'd be on this call right now, but I think his daughter had an event this afternoon, so I apologize he's not here, but he had more important matters in the family to deal with, so I'm doing my best I can to help you out.
No, that's fine, and if the TIA is an industry standard, that certainly we ought to know about it if we're trying to write an ordinance about the industry, and use it as a reference, because we want to be a little more, when we're referencing something, actually say where the hell it's coming from.
Okay, I'll send you what I've got, sir.
To me, that just makes a whole lot more sense to understand that. So I don't like referencing something and then you don't know where you're going from the reference. So, that's all Jim's got for inspections. Matters for other committee members. When we look at the TIA stuff, we should be able to hopefully clarify a whole bunch of stuff. And then the 5 years, we can reference back to one of our questions we had earlier with the inspection time frames, and we'll go that. And then James, you have
two items that, okay, I'd like to mention. First off is that we need to do a planning commission update May 2nd.
Yep.
This committee does. Someone needs to do that off this committee. Brian Hawkins was the last one.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's not with us anymore.
Doesn't seem like it. I was wondering who's going to show.
We've asked him back. So we need to ask, someone would need to kind of step up and do a brief update or status report. And that's all it would be at this point in time.
Yeah. And you're pretty much it. or I would recommend you. How's that?
I try not to stare at you when I talk.
What they're looking at is the planning commission is just going to postpone it for a future or later date. So we're just going to give an update that we're working on this. We're getting close to having a presentable ordinance that the planning commission will have time to evaluate, and then we're going to reschedule. We're probably tentative what we were talking about Monday night is somewhere around June.
July-ish,
June, July. But we should be done with this, and then there's another ordinance for the airport stuff that they're going to do at the same planning meeting. So by then, it'll have roughly about 2 months. The planning commission will have an opportunity to have a workshop on it and go over all that stuff. But May 2nd is just presentation. Here's where we are. This is what we're working at. We're in final stages of agreements and not agreements and...
Yeah, you don't really need 2 points necessarily.
Yeah, really.
Hopefully.
5 minutes, max. 10 minutes if you're milking it.
So we've been working on it. We're in final stages. We're close to the committee has basically addressed all the issues that we wanted to address. Now the planning director is creating another draft for us to look over.
Creating a workable ordinance referencing the applicable laws, something of that nature.
Yeah.
And then we're asking to reschedule to put it off to June or July.
Yeah.
Is it called reschedule or is
it
we're postponing bringing them.
Postpone to date certain.
Actually, a continuance would be the best.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're still going to go date certain now.
So we do. We have to. We don't want to do no.
We'll have to pick a date. And Ann will have a calendar there, and we'll pick the date at that point.
So we're thinking that by June or July, what are the next steps? Is Dave now going to take everything and create a new draft, and then that draft comes back to us to look over?
Yes. Yeah, and it comes to us to look over, and then it'll go to the Planning Commission, and then there'll be a workshop on it, a public hearing. It will go before the public. They'll have an opportunity to chime in.
A workshop? What's
a public workshop where everybody can chime in and give their 2 cents.
As different from the public hearing?
It's kind of the same thing, but the public hearing will be the Planning Commission. The workshop could be the Planning Commission, could just be an open house that says, hey, we're going to have an ordinance come, here's what it is, they'll put it up on the walls, and people walk through and look at it. And that hasn't been identified yet specifically. But public input will still be requested.
So what we're saying that we should have for them in June or July, we're hoping to have
a final draft. Yeah. And then, since it is an ordinance, the Planning Commission will make the decision. Mm-hmm. It can be appealed, but the Planning Commission is the decision authority.
Mm-hmm. But first it goes through this workshop and the hearing.
It goes through the public input process.
Yes.
So all we're doing is ironing out all the crap, making it presentable. Dave's going to make it presentable and turn it into an actionable ordinance, an enforceable ordinance, and then it comes back and we reevaluate it all again.
Okay.
So it's the process. Oh, this is short. When I did aggregate, it was 3 to 4 years. I mean,
so the hearing is at 7 o'clock on Monday the 2nd?
Yeah.
And where is it? It's at
Ambassador.
And like I said, if you're 10 minutes, that's more than enough time. If you want to be 5 minutes,
that's fine too.
All you need some highlights, you might get a question or two. But.
And do we usually kind of near the beginning? Or we?
Oh, yeah. It's just for you, so you will be the item.
The hearing, or that's the item on
Yeah, you'll be the item on
so it's not very long.
I will
long.
Send you the agenda, so
it's
you'll
not very
have...
Long.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, you should be out the door no later than 7:20.
And as soon as you're done, you can leave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm figuring roughly max a half hour, you'll be in and out.
Yeah.
So it should be a quick hit, easy and out.
Because I'll be coming back from Ashland in the morning.
Any other committee members have...
I have one more item, if you don't mind, sir.
Go ahead.
At the front of the room, over the past week, I think it's been about a week now, our GIS department, the county assessor, and the planning office have been developing a new map. You can't see them, but there are a bunch of little red dots on this map that are all the cell towers in Josephine County.
Wow, they need to put a photo around. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is version one. There's another draft coming. He's going to make the dots bigger so you can see them. That would be only one layer, too. He's mapping all the radio towers, all the fire towers, he's putting everything we have data on this map. And actually, this was also requested by 911 and those guys, the fire departments. They want to know where these things are.
Well,
so we're going to have a tool. We're going to have a nice tool. So
that'll really be great when we get to the workshop, too. So.
Yeah, exactly.
A visual.
So feel free to jump over there and take a look at it after the meeting.
So you say... Can't see the red dots from here. If you get close enough, can you see them?
Oh, yeah.
We'll look at it when we're done. Go ahead. Any other committee members have anything?
I'm just going to bring a copy of the TCA.
Oh, absolutely.
Highlight everything. I'll try to email it over to everybody that I have an email address for.
Yeah, and that TIA inspections, that's going to be, I wish we'd heard about that.
I've heard of them. I think it's Telecommunications Industry Association. I just thought they were more lobbying before Congress and such, FCC, and trying to get more frequency, and helping the industry as a whole have a common voice. I didn't really know they set standards to help do that sort of thing.
Which they have standards. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That gives us reference points that we can refer back to. Okay, here's a standard that's nationally accepted. Life is easier that way.
Totally. They did all the work.
So is that what's done now in the sense that it now gets over to Dave, and then when we look at it's over to...
We were kind of, the last conversation that me and Dave had, we were going to have one more meeting to reevaluate hopefully a rough draft.
That he comes up with.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's going to take what you have, and you've been working with him, I know. Come the rough draft, and we'll have let's check out the rough draft. Now we've got some better reference points that we should be including in there. And then we should be probably public comment at that point. So maybe two meetings, three, we're done.
So I would really request at least a week between when we receive a copy of the draft and when we need to discuss it.
I'd expect that too.
Yeah.
Okay. Other matters, this will be my last one chairing this commission because the county commissioners have said they don't want me no more. So at the moment, I have been asked to reapply, even though I have. I'm going to do it again. And see what happens, what the hell. And if they kick me out, they kick me out, and I'm done. But this is my last meeting officially as a planning chair. So for the moment, Saturday I'm done.
Will you be staying with us, this committee?
I don't know. It's not my authority to make that decision.
Oh.
Yeah, that's still a question.
I would not be able to chair it.
Oh.
We have, well, on the May 2nd, we're going to sort all this out.
Yeah, there's no planning commission meeting until May 2nd, so they can't decide anything until then. So
they may throw somebody completely new in here to chair?
They could.
Oh, depends on what they think.
We've had that discussion in limited numbers with a bunch of people on the planning commission because I'm on like four different committees, which means I'm off of all the committees because I was there as official chair, so as a planning reference.
At least the bulk of the work is done.
Yes.
So, you know.
That's true.
Yeah, and, you know, I love this group.
Yeah.
You know, we had one guy leave. Charlie's a little frustrated, but, you know, that was something I think it was just more between the two. The group itself has not had any major issues. We've had some learning experiences and some understanding all the way around. I think we've done great.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm pleased with the results we've gotten, that we've moved forward. You know? Next meeting's agenda, date, and time.
Mm-hmm. We need to give Dave enough time.
Mm-hmm. Well, May 2nd is the PC meeting, so mm-hmm. you probably want sometime after that.
Mm-hmm. So, how, where?
You're going to want to go.
How long do we need to give Dave?
2nd is Monday, so you got 9 and 16th, probably the 16th of May, I would recommend.
Where are we now? It's a Monday?
Yeah, it's about a month.
Yeah, we're usually Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 18th? Or I don't know if Dave will have enough time by the 11th.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty quick.
Yeah.
He mentioned to me that the whole month of May is what he was going to be using to write this thing.
Oh.
Right. So
maybe we should check with him. Yeah.
Why don't we push it out till the first part of June?
Yeah.
And then that way it gives him the month of May. So say you could even do it like on the
first or eighth.
Yeah, the first or the eighth of June. And would 3 to 5 work the same as
June 1st, 3 to 5?
June 1st, 3 to 5.
Does that work for everybody as it has? And here would be just as.
I'm getting the 3 to 5 part. When?
June 1st. The first
June
of June.
Gotcha.
Wednesday. 3 to 5.
Here.
Here, let's just do it here. It's easier all the way around.
Yeah, we're big enough. We're small enough.
Okay.
If we want the thing 2 weeks earlier, that doesn't give him all of May.
No, it does not. But if we run into other glitches, then we can always push. I can email you and
okay,
we push.
It's not a public notice meeting, so we don't have to notice it. So we can change the meeting day to day.
Yes.
Yeah,
so, the parties need to agree upon.
Right.
Okay, Monique, anything?
I have a couple of comments of things that were, actually, as I was just sitting here listening to this meeting, I had thought of where it came to, you know, the big discussion of what is COVID 14. And then with that map, they're showing cell towers as well as fire department towers as well as radio towers. So why, I understand that this law is being written specifically for cell towers, which is wonderful, but why, when a cell tower is being erected, they can't say, yes, okay, we are building this tower, but we are building it to co-locate with the school district to help those three schools. Other antennas will be used on our tower with them. Or we are going to work with the fire department for their emergency services and allow that to be a valid co-locate. To say, okay, I can't go co-locate with this other cell company because I'm going to work with these other companies and we're going to improve public services instead, and we need to have our own tower to do that because there's just not enough room on that tower for the public services and the other cellular site and our cellular site. I'm not trying to say let's regulate these other areas of telecommunications, but if the cellular company, you know, out there and says, this school district, where we're building the site, this we can actually, you know, allow them to put some equipment up that's going to allow them to link their two schools together. Or, you know, public safety, the ambulance company is way up there on a mountain in certain areas, they need some repeaters.
Well, we've had that before where we've discussed about it, because our purview is only cellular GPS, but we talked about that before, is that the emergency services and them are not subject to these codes.
Right, but could it be just, I'm sorry, I don't want to subject them to the same codes, but could it be the standard for co-location? For saying, so, you know, we can't co-locate here because we want to co-locate with these other people that are not also cellular, but they provide valuable services to the community.
Well,
am I kind of getting the point across? We don't want to change the regulation, but...
If a cell company wants to co-locate at Area A, it's because they have to. They're not going to go say, well, we'll go over here to Area B to help accommodate these other people.
Yes, they will.
But sometimes the other people approach them and say, hey, we need to do this, we need to do this, we'll make it to your benefit.
If the geographical change works within their engineering guidelines, they'd probably be very receptive to do that.
Right.
And it works in reverse. They may not only plan ahead of time, but most likely what would happen, a tower would go up, and so someday ultimately someone else would have the need and co-locate it on it. Now, if it's some kind of school district or anything else, all of that two-way radio stuff or anything that you could be referring to, Wi-Fi or internet, is going to be extremely irrelevant as far as loading. You could put up a pencil and co-locate that stuff on an existing tower. So by default, it's there. Did I answer the question?
Sorry, I'm just saying, you know, once the tower, they all have to be built to allow for a co-locate.
Correct.
Which
means double and triple capacity, which is huge.
Exactly, which is a wonderful thing. We want it to be built for co-locate.
Correct.
But do they have to be built with the idea of, okay, but I'm only going to co-locate with other cellular companies?
That would be entirely up to cellular companies. Whether they can negotiate other terms or not.
Misunderstanding the question.
So, yeah.
The question is U.S. Cellular has a tower here. AT&T wants to put a tower here. You're saying, no, AT&T, you can't put your tower there. You need to go up to U.S. Cellular. Well, no, we want to put our tower here because we're going to co-locate with these other people. Instead of co-locating,
we want to put our tower here.
That's the situation we're in right now.
And what the... I wouldn't see a problem with that. Were we having a problem here? What are you doing?
What I'm saying is we're writing in there that the towers have to prove why they can't co-locate elsewhere. But if they're showing they are going to be co-locating with other services, not necessarily other cellular companies, could that meet that requirement? If we were going to change that language there to say, no, it has to co-locate with another cellular PCS co-locate, then that eliminates...
Have we done that?
That's what you guys had discussed today, was saying don't make sure it's that cell tower to cell tower, or cell company to cell company.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many uses out there right now for the Wi-Fi and the broadband and stuff that we want them to share towers. We don't want all the Wi-Fi people to build their own towers, and all the new cell towers, and the new fire department towers. We would like people to share towers.
We
want everybody to share the tower, so making it available for co-locations is what we want to do, but we don't want to say, but, you know, cell has to co-locate with cell, and the broadband has to co-locate with broadband.
So basically what I'm simplifying this and understanding is our definition of co-location, which we were going to change to cell/PCS equipment, would exclude broadband or other fire department.
Which means that would be a basis for consideration in the application.
Yeah. Okay. So
we'd like them to be able to consider other things in the basis for the application showing. We've got arrangements, we've got things, there's going to be co-locations, it's just not with the other cell tower owner. That's why we want our tower, don't want to share with them.
Which I totally agree is cool, and I don't think I realized the wording was otherwise.
That was the reason I brought it up.
Yeah, well, she's doing it, but you brought it up when we were talking about it, you know, about it being redundant and causing an issue. And then we kind of said, well, let's go sell PCS, but maybe we should just strike the or related.
My problem was sometimes I have a hard time really getting the intent out of these words and these sentences. My brain was thinking that it was requiring, like, sell people to go to co-locate. We didn't care about whether two-way radios are located. We were telling the cell carriers they need to look at co-locate. I didn't say whether it was this tower or that tower. They should have co-locate with something that didn't
exist. Right, and that's what I wanted to clarify. It's a co-locate period, not that they just sell the cell to the cell.
But does the word interfere with that?
No, it would if we changed
it. It would.
Okay, but I can't grasp this word.
So if we changed it to cell DCS, it would exclude broadband or any other carrier that would potentially could use the tower.
Yeah, basically what the proposition is okay, you have a cell tower here, and another company wants to put a cell tower in over here. And you're saying, well, hey, look, you can co-locate with these guys. And these guys are saying, well, we don't want to co-locate with them because we already have a deal to co-locate with
them. Yeah, I understand. And I had no idea that we would preclude that from happening.
Yeah. Right.
They should use any facilities available that can legally, structurally accommodate the situation, COLO.
But that one isn't available, it doesn't exist yet.
That's what I'm saying.
The other one doesn't exist.
The other one doesn't exist. There were
but they can
co-locate
on the one that's... Actually, none of them exist at the moment.
If we changed it to say multiple antennas and just struck out the rest of the sentence, that would cover anything and it would leave it open.
And that would say, the EMS wants to, EMS is going to share this tower if we build this tower, so we have our own co-locate.
Well,
so we don't want to go over here to co-locate.
It should be a valid argument for saying, look, we want to put in our own tower instead of sharing someone else's because we already have an agreement to put these services on the tower.
So the point is that a cellular carrier should not be obligated or required to locate on another cellular tower. It should just be a worthwhile tower.
If they're going to already have a co-location.
Because we're talking about two buildings.
Well, if they don't, you can't go. So it's irrelevant. If the tire is so small, you can't locate, it precludes that. So I'm lost again.
Maybe they're saying in their application to build a new tower.
Okay.
They have to say, I want to build a new tower because I can't use this existing tower.
I think we can always create a situation that's going to be an exception or going to be something like that. This law is about cellular PCS.
And that I'm not arguing at all.
So if there already is a tower and another cellular PCS company says we want a tower over here, even though co-locating with them would serve the same gap, would fill the same
gap. Not necessarily that it would serve the same gap, but we just said it should be an additional thing for it to be for consideration for it. Because, gaps are gaps. Gaps are subjective. They can make the subjective maps whatever they want to be, show gap, not show gap.
She's just trying to collate different equipment.
But what you're saying is we don't want this to restrict us. We're not cell companies, so we don't want this law to restrict us in any way. But now we want this law to help us. I mean, it's like you can't have it both ways.
Flag that and have the planning director and pull and see if there's...
Okay. Just so I understand, I think what I'm hearing is that when a new tower is proposed, you would like to see the ability of this new tower to have other antennas, to have other services hanging on as an argument for feasibility of putting it there in that location.
Are you going to put the burden of making a tower big enough day one by a private entity so a cellular carrier could come? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's already in here.
We're not talking about the private carrier's tower. We're talking about when the cellular towers come in and apply. We're not talking anything.
I'm really sticking my neck out here, but I feel like, you are business owners in a certain thing, and so much of what you said in this committee is to protect your own interest.
But did it harm anything else? If they're wanting to have somebody else's tower, what I'm getting out of it is this, and which is a lot part of my business, which addresses your concerns about business owners looking at our own concerns. This is what my business is. I build big-ass towers, and I put anybody who wants to be on them, including cellular carriers, of which I have many. Cool, right? I'm totally confused. I think you're getting at the point that if you put in a big-ass tower, the cellular carriers can come to you and get on there, too?
No. That's a given. If I put in a tower, they can come on my tower.
So you're thinking that I'm coming across just from our point of view as a business, doesn't. We can build a tower for ourselves if we choose to, because we're not the cellular industry.
Yeah.
I'm saying that And Mr. Black, I think you understood me correctly with what I'm saying. When the cell tower companies come forward and say, we want to build a new tower, if they come into the community and talk to different areas of the community and say, hey, you know, we want to build a new tower, is there anyone in the community we can work with, yada, yada. So the fire district says, hey, you know, we'll support this tower. We need to use it. We want to hang our radios on it.
How is that not in place already?
Because if there's already a tower within X number of feet, X number of miles, X number of yards, whatever it is.
Owned by a Southern carrier.
Right, okay.
That
has room for co-location. The chances of the second tower being put in is pretty slim.
Yes, and it should be.
Okay.
Let's say that first cellular company that has a tower in there, they're gonna let the other cell company co-locate.
Okay.
Are they going to allow the fire department to use their stuff?
This is the point.
If they don't want to do it, we've just hurt the community.
Unless we have a provision which was suggested to be considered, I think it was one of the things that was referred to the planning director to actually consider, was whether we want to have any requirement that they have to have public service.
James has that note. We're going to put it forward, and then we'll let that be evaluated.
Well, let me ask one more thing.
Well, I need to understand it because I was making that change in the definition.
And I was
Can I, this is Jim, I got to take off you guys. This has been an engaging conversation. I apologize, I have to leave a little early, but I'll talk to you all again soon.
All right.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Give me the courtesy, because we're in
this for
a while. Are you saying you want subordinates to say that the Southern carriers would be required?
No.
See, I can't get a clue where everybody is. I just can't. I'm a good technician. I'm a crappy lawyer.
We're saying we want it to be a valid cause for consideration in an application to show that you're going to be working with other companies and other co-locates, not necessarily cellular. And we just want it to be a valid point in the application process or in the consideration process.
So are you saying that if there's other agencies, whatever that might be, potential users of this tower that want a specific area, that would give the cellular carrier reason to be there?
Yes, they heard as part argument from why the new tower and five cell company should be
there. When they could have gone to another one.
With another one, exactly.
Oh.
Does that kind of make a little more sense?
Well, now it does. All I could say to that is this.
Well,
so we don't want it to be an automatic pass. You know, everything is up for review. We just want it to be allowed as
a reviewable option.
Exactly.
Well,
Yeah,
I really disagree. That's all I can say. I disagree.
Fine.
Well,
I don't even want to go into it.
Let me ask you this, because I'm concerned. What if the other agency that wanted to put in the tower just did it anyway?
I'm not clear on what you're saying.
Because they're not cellular, and it'd be much easier for them.
Right. They're saying if they can have other users that show they have the need, then that might leverage the opportunity for the cellular company to be there because others have need. Well, okay.
If the cell company doesn't put in the tower, then there's less restrictions on that tower. There's less regulation on that tower.
We want the cell company to be the one.
Which would you rather have? A tower that's well regulated or a tower that, well, it's...
I want to have the cell companies co-locating with each other. That's what I want. I want that's the standard across the country.
Well, we're going to put that up. We're not going to settle that today, obviously.
But so what does that mean, we're putting it up?
Because we're putting it up to the planning director for the legal...
It's going straight to the state.
But if a tower, lastly, just give me one more shot at this. If the private company put in a big old ass tower, and it's already there, that's one of the things, the eyesores and radiation, if it's already there, because the private company did, what's the harm of this other company being on it too? Because you've already got this thing there, this eyesore and such.
Well, that's what I thought.
It's an existing tower. There's an existing support structure. Right. I don't know.
So why couldn't you and I put up a big-ass old tower and then recruit the center company to come over and go on it? Everybody's happy.
We can do that.
Well, then why is there a problem? I'm still lost. Yes, we can do that. I do it all day long.
So I'm not sure I want to do
it.
I'm not changing the definition.
I'm lost.
Now there's a question there. So what's the question?
I don't know.
physically,
the question is going to be, I'm asking, do we want to add criteria standards to consider other services on a tower for visibility?
Yeah. He gets cell companies pay for that tower
because
they all get
a good question.
It's a good question.
Right, but that's now just coming up. That's one other angle of it.
That's right now.
Which is not really an issue of this.
We looked at just the wording with
him.
But see, that could be a reason for a new tower and new tower and new tower and not filling up any original co-location tower. I mean, that could be done over and over and over again.
We don't want to do that.
So it nullifies the whole co-location requirement.
Steve? You got anything for us, Steve?
No, I do.
Oh,
sorry.
Now I do.
Steve Williams. I do remember Michael in his presentation to the Planning Commission originally when this all got started, right? The number one thing was practically the number one thing out of his mouth was that the prime consideration in cell companies' approvals was co-location. I mean, that was the leading thing right along. You know, no conditions or exceptions or anything like that. The prime thing, as far as the planning department went, was, you know, number one thing was co-location, and then it went on to other various things. Mm-hmm. So, for me, right up front, you know, that's hanging the tune, you know. And so to vary that in any way, I think is... bogus.
So, do you have a problem with what we're trying to talk about? Do you agree with us or her?
I mean, well, I'm saying that you know, if you have this situation where a company says we want to get on board with all these other little things, you know, Wi-Fi or emergency services and everything, so we should be able to have our own tower. I don't think that should rule the day. You know, period.
The whole point was the question is what is the definition of co-location, because co-location is the sharing of antennas. Yeah. So does it specifically mean that they have to be shared cellular?
Well, in your example, I think in a situation where there's already...
emergency services are never considered a little thing.
Well, okay.
But that could be an argument to create new tower after new tower after new tower, and that's opposed to what we're trying to do, one of the things we're trying to do with co-location.
I see the answer to your dilemma is if you've got an existing tower and you've got somebody who wants to put in another tower in the same area and these emergency services, et cetera, want to go on a tower, they should go on the original tower. They should somehow make a deal with that company that already has an existing tower.
What if it's not where they need it? What if the services that want to go in, what if they don't want to go way over there? What if they need it over here?
Well, if the cell tower can prove that it needs it over there, then it gets a new tower. If co-location isn't feasible, if it doesn't fill the gap.
That's my point. So it's not feasible for the cell tower.
What you're giving is a loophole for cell companies to create new towers.
However, they're not going to build more than they need. That's just...
No, they're going to build, but they want them where they want them.
And if they,
exactly
and if they choose,
them.
And if they prove that in engineering and meet our criteria, they're going to get it.
I mean, so feel like you just spent how many months at this law, at the back door, we're threatening the co-location, which, as Steve said, was...
We're not getting threatening. We're just trying to get a better definition on it.
Bear with me for a second. Answer me this. Because I'm really trying to understand. I think you guys can see I'm not part of the argument. I'm trying to understand the dynamic. This is a new situation. You're afraid they're just going to have another loophole to build them everywhere. Well, can you accept the fact that they're going to build more than they need? Would you agree with that?
No.
They don't need them, but they're going to build them anyway.
No, but they will build their own tower if they want it exactly here, rather than co-locating with and paying rent to this other person's tower. You know, even though that can satisfy the gap, yes, they'll pay for a new tower because then they'll even get rent from these other companies. But they'll pay for a new tower to get it exactly where they want, and that's exactly one of the main things that they're.
Okay, so this is the angle. Then you're afraid they will the cellular carrier will pay for the tower that the other ones will use. And I thought we were about some other tower going up by
various agencies that the cellular carrier would want to co-locate on. So you're concerned about who paid for it.
No, I'm not so concerned about who paid for it.
Well, I'll give you a prime, example.
Last example, and then we're going to...
And I'm sorry for dragging it up this long.
The
whole situation now... Okay, AT&T wants
to say there was a discussion.
AT&T does not have a goal. Okay, they're very proprietary.
About the definition, whether this should be cellular, whether it should be
original. So, the city council and said,
James,
threw together an
yeah, I'm going to run this by.
Originally, we were just changing the definition to read that, and now we're questioning that.
Well, I think this should stay the way it is. Where I think they're going
that's
is
you guys, right?
Down in another section
so
of code here.
Well, the problem is that AT&T wants to
review
procedures.
They want to make.
But we're aware we do not want to give any company
the ability of other services going on this tower
when
to be incorporated.
Them creating their own tower for other users.
And
nobody forced them otherwise in the ordinance or whatever. Well, then there's the problem.
Are we good,
Brian?
Where
we
are. Something
like in Williams, all AT&T would have to do to get their new site, even though they could co-locate, is to get a few other people from the community to say we want to go on the same tower and we wouldn't all fit in the co-location. And all of a sudden they have an argument not to co-locate.
And in the original, in their original proposal, that was part of the idea. They were on board with the fire department, you know, and then they're saying that we're gonna provide you a place for your emergency services up on our tower.
So it still gets back to your concern of allowing the cellular carrier to build it, their money.
Because
our issue is a whole new tower when we could have gone on with somebody else.
Okay, meeting adjourned.